Falcon's prow, ignited her own lightsaber at mid-guard, and raced to attack. Alima did not even show Leia the respect of turning around. She simply raised a leg and planted a hazmat boot squarely in Leia's stomach and sent her flying back into a landing strut, then directed a second stun bolt into Meewall and turned all her attention to Cockmame. Leia pushed off the strut and swung for the head. Alima had no choice but to drop to her haunches. Leia slammed the butt of her lightsaber into Alima's head, striking to subdue, but striking hard. The Twi'lek staggered and looked as though she might pitch forward. Leia cocked her arm to strike again and felt one of the Twi'lek's legs catching her across the ankle, swinging through to sweep her off her feet. Leia landed on the back of her head so hard that even with the soft ground, her vision began to narrow. She braced a hand by her hip and instantly brought her feet under her. But Alima was already rolling to her feet, facing Leia, her good arm reaching out to call her lightsaber. Leia reached out in the force and tried to wrench the weapon away. But her head was spinning, and the lightsaber floated straight into Alima's hand. A frightening darkness came to Alima's eyes, and she took one step toward Leia. "Put down your weapon, princess. There's no need for us to fight. Without coolant." The Twi'lek stopped mid-sentence, apparently realizing how she had been tricked, then said, "You have extra coolant." Leia shrugged. "We had to find out." Alima sprang. Leia blocked the Twi'lek's first attack, then stretched out with the force and used it to pull herself to her feet a dozen paces away. Alima glanced up, and Leia had an idea. "Han, I think she's figured us out," Leia screamed into her headset. "She's looking toward the drive exhaust."
"The drive exhaust?"
Han managed to make his confusion sound like alarm.
"Well, stop her. If she cuts one of those..."
"Han!"
"Yeah?"
"Enough,"
Leia said. Han certainly knew his own ship well enough to realize that the aft escape pod discharged a couple of meters forward of the drive exhaust, and she would just have to trust him to figure out the significance of that. "She has a headset too, remember?"
"All right, just stop her."
Leia raised her lightsaber and charged. Alima looked first puzzled, then worried. Then finally, she pivoted away and blocked as Leia swung at her head. Leia kicked wildly at the Twi'lek's leading foot, forcing her to step back, then swung again at the head. Alima blocked and stepped into the attack, trying to work her way past Leia to strike at the drive exhaust. Leia attacked hard, smashing her knee into Alima's ribs, forcing herself to not look toward the escape pod hatch, to not even think about it. Alima surprised Leia with a spinning hook kick that caught her across the shins and sent her sprawling onto her face just centimeters from a pool of spilled coolant. Han's panicked voice came over the headset.
"Leia! Stop her!"
Leia looked up to find Alima racing past, only three steps shy of the pod hatch, but a full meter off to one side. She locked her blade into the activated position, then rose to her knees and threw her lightsaber at the Twi'lek's shoulder. Whether Alima sensed or heard the blade coming did not matter. She dodged away, and that was when the escape pod's outer hatch blew, catching the Twi'lek along her whole left side, buckling her knees and leaving her lying motionless in the grass. At the near end of the academy training grounds, the youngest students were practicing force leaps, stepping to the mark with knitted brows, then launching themselves one after the other over a 3-meter crossray. Some of the children in line noticed Luke and Mara emerging from the access tunnel and began to point and whisper. So Luke made a show of nodding approval as the next few jumpers cleared the beam. "These are the Wudus," Luke explained to their guest, Aristocrat Chaff Orm Bintrani of the Chiss Ascendancy. "They're our youngest students."
"How young are they?"
"The Wudus are generally between 5 and 7 years old, Formby," Mara said, calling the aristocrat by his core name. "Though that varies by species. Some mature at markedly different rates."
"Yes. Well, we wouldn't have that problem in the Ascendancy."
Formby folded his hands behind his back and peered across the running track at the children.
But I'm sure you didn't summon me here to discuss Jedi training techniques.
As a matter of fact, we did, Luke said. We want you to understand what goes into the training of a modern Jedi.
Hoping to impress me so much that I'll persuade the ruling circle to let you handle the Korriban problem?
Formby asked.
Precisely, Mara said. And it was an invitation, not a summons. The conflict is of no concern to the Galactic Alliance.
Formby's tone was deceptively relaxed.
Why do the Jedi insist on involving themselves?
The Jedi serve the Force, Luke replied. Our concerns reach well beyond the Galactic Alliance.
Formby's gaze grew hard. Into the Ascendancy?
Into the colony, at least, Luke said.
You understand nothing about the colony, Formby said, almost absently. If you did, you would leave it to us.
We understand that what you're doing at Korriban comes close to violating Chiss law, Mara said, unless the Ascendancy has bent from 1,000 years of tradition.
A lot has changed in the Ascendancy. Formby's voice grew resigned. But not that. It remains unlawful for the Chiss to be the aggressor people.
I've always admired that about the Ascendancy, Luke said.
In truth, I find it rather quaint, Formby replied. But having no desire to find myself exiled, I'll follow the law, even if it means the destruction of the Ascendancy itself.
Your devotion is admirable, Mara said, as is your courage, which is why I'm so puzzled about the Chiss fear of Killix.
If you are puzzled, it is only because you are ignorant of the colony's true nature.
Then enlighten us, Luke said. The sooner the Jedi understand the situation, the sooner we will find a solution and end our presence in Korriban.
And if there is no solution?
It would be better to discover that now, Luke said, before any more of our Jedi become like Raynar.
Formby frowned. Who is Raynar?
Raynar Thul, Mara said. He went MIA during the war. He was presumed dead, but apparently his ship crashed inside the colony. A nest of Killix rescued him and saved his life, Luke said.
Saved his life?
Formby sounded surprised.
When did this Raynar come up missing?
About 6 years ago?
Close. Luke began to have a sinking feeling. It was a little over 7.
I see. Formby's gaze turned inward. That explains it.
Explains what? Mara demanded.
The Defense Fleet Reconnaissance Corps has been watching the colony for centuries, Formby said. It has been slowly expanding over time, but it wasn't considered a threat.
Until recently, Mara surmised.
Correct, Formby said. The first satellite nests appeared on our border, and we began to notice an exponential population increase. Imagine our surprise when we learned that now they had hospitals to care for their ailing and were using interstellar trade to alleviate the cyclic food shortages that once kept their populations in check.
And that frightened the Ascendancy into sending your defoliators to give nature a helping hand? Mara asked.
No, we didn't make that decision until later, after we had discovered how dangerous they were.
Formby hesitated a moment. Didn't you know about the joiners? Luke asked.
We took precautions, Formby said. Very stringent precautions.
That still didn't work, Mara surmised.
They worked, Formby replied, until someone started sabotaging them.
The Killix? Luke asked.
Formby frowned. We value fools no more than the Jedi, Master Skywalker. The precautions remain solely under our control.
There was a moment of silence. Then Luke asked, And?
We don't really understand,
Formby admitted.
All we know is that the precautions broke down, and before we realized it, 2 entire families had become joiners.
R2-D2 emitted a piercing shriek. Then his holoprojector activated, and a fuzzy image of Leia appeared on the ground in front of him. For a moment, Luke thought that it was the old message he had recorded for Obi-Wan.
Then he noticed that she was dressed in a white jumpsuit instead of a ceremonial gown, and her hair was falling loose down her back instead of being gathered in those ear buns she used to wear. Luke? Her voice was scratchy and barely audible.
Are you there?
Yes, Luke answered. R2, where's this coming from? I know it's being relayed through the Academy HoloNet transceiver, Luke said. Leia, where are you?
Luke, can't you? But important. Killick attacked Saba. Stowaways on. We think after you. And maybe Ben.
Stowaways? Mara gasped. An image of their son holding an empty container of gel meat flashed from her mind to Luke's. Then she was racing toward the exit.
Ben!
The door slid aside, revealing the clean-lined interior of the Skywalker's uncluttered Osen cottage. Mara had grown so accustomed to the vague uneasiness she had been feeling in the Force that the sensation barely registered as she crossed the foyer. But this time, she paid special attention, closing her eyes and letting her feet carry her toward where it seemed strongest.
Mom!
Mara opened her eyes and found Ben standing before her. Did you bring a pet back from Julio? Ben's eyes grew round.
A pet?
A Killick, Mara said. Is that what you've been doing with all that gel meat and nerve spread?
Aren't Killicks smart? Ben asked.
Smarter than I thought, Mara said.
Why?
'Cause then she'd be a friend, not a pet. Mara cocked an eyebrow. She, Ben? Ben's mouth fell open, and he backed toward the kitchen.
They're all...
Stay here. Mara started around the table. Don't even think of moving. Mara stretched her awareness into the kitchen and sensed only Nana inside, but that did not stop her from pulling her lightsaber. Mara crept into the living room, then went straight to Ben's room, where he had snuck around to and was now busy pushing the closet panel closed. Ben, come away from there. Now. Ben pressed his back to the closet.
It's not what you...
Ben, we just received a holo from Aunt Leia, Mara said. She was worried that a Killick assassin might have stowed away aboard the Shadow. So if all that gel meat you've been taking is for...
Gorog's no assassin, Ben said. She's my best friend.
If Gorog's your friend, tell her to come out nice and slow. We'll talk this... The muffled groan of a sliding wall panel sounded from two rooms over. Using the Force to slide the wall panels aside in front of her, Mara rushed two rooms over and found six black limbs, two legs and four arms, sticking out from under the low table that Luke used for a writing desk. The mandibles were protruding from one end, and the whole piece of furniture was trembling as though there were a ground quake. Ben rushed up beside Mara.
Gorog's scared!
Okay. Tell her to come out. Everything will be all right. A low rumble reverberated from under the table.
She doesn't trust you, Ben reported.
You speak Killick?
I don't speak it, I just understand it.
Gorog drummed again, and he added, She says you're a killer. The Killick slowly moved away, carrying the table along on her back and drumming incessantly.
She says you killed lots of people when you didn't have to. For Palpatine, Ben said.
Mom, who's Palpatine?
Palpatine, Mara corrected automatically. A bad man I used to know. How does Gorog know his name? A stream of brown saliva shot out from under the table. Mara's reflexes were too quick for it to come near her face. But in the quarter second it took her to draw away, the insect came flying at her with the table still on its back. She activated her lightsaber instinctively and heard Ben crying out over the crackle of the igniting blade.
Don't! Ben cried. Please!
Mara deactivated the blade in a pang of motherly concern and whirled into a spinning back kick instead, her foot landing high because she had to lift her leg above Ben's head. Instead of launching the Killick across the room, the attack simply knocked off the table and drove the insect to the floor.
A soft sizzle sounded from the wall beside Mara, and a sour, acrid smell filled her nostrils. She put down a hand to push Ben back, and Gorog slammed a mandible into her ankles, sweeping her from her feet. Mara hit the floor flat on her back. The Killick stabbed a pair of sharp pincer hands down on her shoulders and brought her head around, a hypo-shaped proboscis pushing out between the mandibles, venom dripping from its tip. Mara smashed her lightsaber handle into the tube, folding it over and drawing a boom of pain from the Killick's chest cavity.
"Mom!"
Ben cried. "Go to your room!" Mara hooked her elbow around the arm on her shoulder and pulled, dropping Gorog to an elbow.
"Now!"
The Killick reached for Mara's neck with its other two hands. Mara flipped it onto its back. She sprang instantly to her feet, and the Killick flexed a wing and flipped instantly to its feet. Ben remained in the doorway, on the opposite side of the Killick from Mara. "Ben, I'm very disappointed in you." Mara's shoulders were throbbing where the pincers had pierced them, and blood was running down the front of her jumpsuit. Ben's face grew pale, and the Killick began to pivot with Mara, keeping itself between her and her son. She thought for a moment the Killick meant to use Ben as a hostage, but it was careful to stay away from him, as though it too were worried he might be accidentally injured.
"Ben, I think Gorog wants you to leave too."
Ben glanced at the Killick, then asked Mara, "Are you going to kill her?"
"Ben, I'm the one who's bleeding here."
"But you're a Jedi Master," Ben said. "It doesn't matter if a Jedi Master bleeds."
"You've been watching too many action holos," Mara said. Nevertheless, she hung her lightsaber on her belt.
"But okay, I promise, if you leave right now."
Ben sighed and left the room. The Killick spread its mandibles and sprang. Mara caught it in the force and slammed it into a support post. There was a sharp crackle, and when the insect dropped to the floor, one of its wings jutted out at an angle.
"I don't understand why you want to fight," Mara said, "because you have no chance of winning."
Gorog jumped across the room, mandibles snapping at head height. Mara rushed to meet the attack, then dropped into a slide, catching both ankles as she passed beneath the insect, spinning to her belly, twisting its legs around, and slamming the Killick down on its back. Then Mara saw the table, lying on its side where it had fallen when Gorog attacked. She reached out with a mental hand, turned it end on, and brought it sailing into the Killick's head. The table connected with a spectacular pop, and Gorog's grasp loosened. Mara scrambled free and force sprang to her feet, then spun around to find the Killick collapsed on its belly, all six limbs trembling and shaking in convulsions. Jacen dropped out of the Tick Tree to discover that even here, in the muggy heart of her private jungle garden, Queen Mother Tenel Ka was not alone. Seated in a small sunken courtyard, with her rust-colored braids hanging down the back of her sleeveless frock, she was surrounded by 20 courtiers, all attired in absurd hand-tailored imitations of the Queen Mother's rustic fashion. Jacen crept up silently behind a camouflaged sentry who was patrolling the musky foliage along the garden wall, the last of the palace's many layers of security, and grasped the man's neck. The fellow tried to spin and yell the alarm, but went limp as Jacen sent a paralyzing jolt of force energy through his spine. Still alert to her Jedi instincts, Tenel Ka felt the disturbance and turned on her bench, revealing a classic profile even more stunning than the one in Jason's memory. He expanded his presence in the force so she would not be alarmed, then lowered the unconscious sentry to the ground and stepped out of the shrubbery. Tenel Ka, smiling warmly, opened her arms. Jacen was not surprised to see that the right one still ended at the elbow.
"Jacen," she cried, "welcome."
"Thank you." It warmed Jason's heart to find such an enthusiastic reception.
"It's good to see you again, Queen Mother."
She pressed herself tightly enough to Jason's chest. Jacen hugged her back and, noting the noxious glowers from her male courtiers, tried not to smirk.
I apologize for entering this way, Jason said, but your social secretary refused to announce me. He kept telling me you were unavailable. Tennel Ka released him and took a step back, her expression darkening. Which one? I must see that he's corrected. No need. Jason allowed himself the hint of a smile. He has been. Thank you for taking the time to see me, Queen Mother. No, thank you for coming, Tennel Ka said. You cannot know how refreshing it is to speak with someone who is not trying to win my hand or coax something out of me. Jason felt instantly guilty. Actually, I did come to ask a favor. A big one. I know. Tennel Ka squeezed his arm and leaned closer to him. Everyone wants something from me. It is the Haven way, Jason. Including me? Tennel Ka looked away. Even you, Jason. She sat down and patted the bench beside her, then said, Now the houses of my suitors will be united against you. It would be wise to watch what you eat while you are here. Thanks, Jason said, but I won't be staying. Of course not. Tennel Ka continued to look away, but Jason sensed tears in her voice. What is it you need from us? You felt Raynar's call? Jason asked. Yes. In the end, I had to keep myself locked in the palace. I didn't know who it was from. I thought maybe... Then Tennel Ka turned to face him. Her gray eyes were clear and steady, but she had not bothered to wipe the tear tracks from her cheeks. I have heard that a colony of Kilix is threatening Chiss space. In that moment, the entire weight of the last 5 years' loneliness fell on Jason's heart, and he wanted nothing more than to take Tennel Ka in his arms and kiss her. Instead, he said, It's a complicated situation. Their gazes met, and neither hurried to look away. All right, Jason. I confess, I cannot guess. What is it you require of us? A battle fleet, he said. For the Kilik colony. Jason elaborated on the past events. Tennel Ka's face did not show the surprise that Jason sensed from her in the Force. That is a great deal to ask. The Haven Consortium is a member of the Galactic Alliance. Does that mean the Galactic Alliance makes your decisions for you? Tennel Ka's gray eyes turned steely. It means that we try to avoid angering Alliance friends. It's more important to prevent this war, Jason said. The Chiss are pushing too hard, and the Kilix couldn't withdraw if they wanted to. It's going to erupt into full-blown carnage, unless something happens to give the Chiss pause and the colony a reason to be patient. And why should it matter to the Haven people if a border conflict on the other side of the galaxy does become war? Because it would end in xenocide, one way or the other. Jason answered. Tennel Ka turned and looked up into the palm trees, and Jason sensed in the silence her Jedi instincts battling her duties as the Haven Queen. Finally, she stood and extended her hand. I think my suitors have had enough time to plot your death. I'm glad I could bring them together. Yes, you have been very useful that way. They started down the moss path toward the water. I hope you will stay the night. It would be even more effective. Jason slowed. Tennel Ka. He did not need to wonder exactly what she was asking. He could feel it in the Force. I didn't come here to become your paramour. You won't. Paramours are playthings. She stopped in full view of the pond's far bank and gave him a long, warm kiss. And I would never play with you, Jason Solo. Jason was beginning to feel very carried along, and spending the night could only help his chances of getting the fleet. Then I'll stay, he said. But it can only be one night. One night is fine, Tennel Ka said. One night will be very useful. Elders, welcome. Leia said, bowing. She stepped away from the door and waved her Ithorian guests into the Risoed room.
I hope you'll forgive the room, Leia said as the Ithorians filed into the foyer. It's the best I could do under the circumstances.
Uwamu Wawabi, the eldest of the Ithorian elders, politely swung his ocular nodes around the room.
Your presence would make any room pleasant, Princess Leia.
Wawabi spoke out of only one of the mouths on his throat, a reflection of the poor medical care aboard the Ithorian refugee cities.
But we thank you for your concern.
And thank you for coming to Ossus. I know it was an unexpected journey. Leia let her sentence trail off as a pair of black-clad Galactic Alliance bodyguards stepped into the foyer behind the Ithorians.
May I help you? She said.
Yes. The first woman's cobalt eyes darted past Leia. You can clear the room.
I'll be happy to clear the room when our meeting is finished.
Until then, feel free to wait in the reception room.
We have no time to wait.
Cal Omus entered the room wearing a rumpled travel tunic as red as the veins in his bloodshot eyes.
Where's Luke?
I really don't know.
Chief Omus, allow me to present Uwamu Wawabi and the Council of Ithorian Elders.
Omus turned to the Ithorians. Elder Wawabi, a pleasure to see you again.
He bowed formally to Wawabi, then greeted each of the other elders by name.
Forgive me for pushing in like this, but I've asked the senior Jedi to meet me here to discuss a matter of vital importance.
Luke entered the room with Mara, and, pausing to bow to the Ithorians, approached the Chief of State.
Most senior Jedi aren't available. Perhaps if there had been more notice.
Omus gave Luke an icy glare.
As it is, you will have to do.
Aristocra Formby is demanding to know why the Galactic Alliance has sent a battle fleet to the colony.
Have we?
Luke's gaze remained fixed on Omus.
I wasn't aware of that.
Neither was I, Omus fumed. Yet a Haven battle fleet was seen at some place called the Lysel Nest. I was hoping someone here could explain.
Omus's gaze swung to Leia. Perhaps you.
I'm afraid not.
Leia had been half expecting this.
They were in no mood to answer questions.
Han said, they wanted to intern us.
Intern you?
Omus knitted his brow.
You encountered this fleet?
Leia began to have a sinking feeling.
You didn't know?
No.
Omus's voice was icy.
I apologize, Leia said. We gave our word not to reveal their presence.
Leia had no choice, Luke said. The word of one Jedi to another is binding.
Omus let his chin drop. Don't tell me there were Jedi aboard those ships.
It was Tenel Ka's fleet, and she is a Jedi, Mara said. Leia's word is as binding to Tenel Ka's agent as it would be to the Queen herself.
If you didn't know about our encounter with the fleet, Chief Omus, why did you think Han and I could tell you what it was doing in the colony?
Leia asked.
Because of your son.
Omus finally took a chair across from her.
I thought Jason might have told you why he arranged this.
Jason? Han asked. He sat at Leia's right.
Last time I checked, he wasn't king of anything.
No, but Tenel Ka dispatched the Haven fleet shortly after his visit. Omus waited as Luke, Mara, and the other Jedi Masters also took seats at the conference table.
I doubt it was a coincidence.
It wasn't, Jason said, breezing into the room. I asked her to send a fleet to the colony's aid.
Omus twisted around in his chair.
Why in the blazes would you do something like that?
Jason took a chair at Omus's side, then said,
I was trying to prevent a war.
Prevent one? Omus demanded. The Chiss!
Understand only power, Jason interrupted. And now the Killiks have some.
The Haven fleet will buy us the time we need to resolve this conflict.
At the Galactic Alliance's expense, Omus said.
The Chiss are already threatening to withdraw their security patrols if we don't bring our Jedi under control.
Omus turned back to Luke.
And that's exactly what I want you to do, Master Skywalker, he said. By force, if necessary. I want all of our Jedi and the Haven fleet
back inside Galactic Alliance borders by this time next month.
Wouldn't it be better for you to talk to Queen Tenel Ka? Leia asked. She is, after all, the leader of a Galactic Alliance Republic.
And a Jedi, Omis countered. Frankly, she refuses to listen to me. She insists she is only doing what is right, and the discussion ends there.
Actually, Leia said, there may be a way for the Jedi to stop the war and earn the trust of the Chiss. On the way home, Han and I discovered a small group of uninhabited planets. I think they might make a good home for the Korribu nests.
A wave of disappointment filled the Force, and Leia could not help looking past Omis toward the foyer. The Ithorians were all staring silently in her direction, their eyes half closed in resignation, or perhaps it was sorrow. Still, when Leia met Wawabi's gaze, he merely tightened his lips and gave her an approving nod. Leia directed her attention to Luke. I propose that we move the Korribu nests to these planets.
How? Jason asked.
There are 4 nests in the system, each with at least 20,000 Kylix. And you don't just move a Kylix nest. You have to rebuild it inside a ship, lay in stores.
I'm sure Tenel Ka will instruct her fleet to help with that, Leia said. In fact, I'm rather counting on it.
A long golden arrow curved through the heart of the hologramic flight control display, tracing the route of the stolen skiff from the repair hangar to its current location on the edge of Osus's gravity well. The reckless manner in which the skiff had cut through the approach zone of the planet's primary spaceport suggested the pilot had been eager to get away from the Jedi Academy as quickly as possible. But Luke had already known that. Escapees liked to move fast.
30 seconds before she can jump, a flight controller reported.
A large-headed Bith, with an auditory data feed in one ear, he was seated at one of a dozen control stations surrounding the hologramic display.
She still won't acknowledge our signal.
Keep trying, Luke said. He could feel the anxiety of the XJ-3 pilots trailing the skiff, a pair of young Jedi Knights flying their first security rotation. Do we know yet whether she has company?
Not with certainty, said the Bith supervisor, a blue-skinned Duras woman named Orame.
An inset of a repair hangar security vid appeared at the base of the flight control display.
But we did find this.
The inset showed Alima Rar, having escaped from Silgal's testing lab, striding through a darkened repair bay, 2 cases of food goods floating through the air ahead of her.
We think that shadow
enhanced the cases, Mara said. Along with Han, Leia, and several others, she had accompanied Luke up from the hangar floor as soon as the stolen skiff had streaked skyward. Bring up a label if you can. The Duros typed a command, and the carton label filled the image. Nutrafit gel meat, Mara read.
She's stealing Gorog, Ben cried.
The skiff's trajectory reached the edge of Osus's gravity well and vanished. The flight controller reported that the stolen skiff had entered hyperspace. Han let out a sigh of relief.
Ride on,
Not now, Luke interrupted, raising his hand to silence Han. Luke felt his own dismay mirrored in Mara. If Ben remained in touch with Gorog after she had entered hyperspace, it could only be through the colony's will. He was part joiner. Dark Nest joiner.
Ben, maybe Nana can take you to the pilot's lounge for some fizzer, Mara said. We have some things to discuss. Then we'll find you there before we leave.
As soon as Ben and Nana were out of earshot, Mara asked, how did you know which vessel she'd steal?
We didn't, Leia said. We bugged them all.
Speaking of bugs, we'd better get going, Han said. That transmitter only has a subspace range of 50 light years. We can't be too far behind when Alima hits colony space, or we'll be stuck guessing where she went.
Luke followed Han and the others toward the door. Their intention was to follow Alima to the core of the Dark Nest, then undermine its influence over the colony by eliminating Welk and, assuming she had survived the crash, Lomi Plo. Silgal and Jason were convinced that at least Welk had survived.
and that a dark Jedi now led the Gorog in much the same way Raynar led the Yunu. Korribu's brightly striped orb hung sandwiched between the flat, twinkling clouds of two sizable space fleets. For now, both the Chiss and the Hapens seemed content to avoid a battle, each hiding from the other behind the gas giant's considerable bulk. But they were also maintaining aggressive postures, keeping their sublight drives lit and their shields up, dropping reconnaissance patrols through the planet's golden ring system like air spinners from a Bespin rock trawler. "Good news," Han said, decelerating hard. As they had half expected, the homing beacon aboard Alima's stolen skiff had led them straight back into the middle of the Korribu conflict. Though the standoff between the two fleets was certain to complicate their plans, Han could not have been more thrilled. After they destroyed the Dark Nest, he could track down Jaina and have her safely away from the Tot Nest within hours. "We're just in time for the war." Leia pointed at the tactical display, which now identified the fleet hovering above Korribu's northern pole as Hapen and the one at the southern pole as Chiss. Across the center of Korribu ran a thick band of yellow bogey symbols. "Dark ships," Han gasped. "That's how it looks," Leia said. "There must be a million of them."
"Closer to 150,000, Captain," June said from behind him. "Plus a handful of freighters, blast boats, and 4 KDY orbital defense platforms."
Han raised his brow. "Where's Alima?"
"Still working on that," Leia answered.
A grid appeared over the bright band of bogey symbols strung across Kuribu's equator.
"Alima's skiff has to be somewhere in there, or we would have picked her up by now," Leia said.
A quarter of the grid turned red. "Do an efflux search on the areas I'm assigning you. She's only a few minutes ahead, so her ion drives must still be active." Han brought up the first grid square and began to look for a telltale plume of hot ions. At this scale, the band of dark ships resolved itself into a lumpy strand of swirling dots, with the gray disk of one of Kuribu's moons hanging just beneath the main area of activity. Han brought the moon, Kerr, to the center of his display and enlarged the scale. A blue circle the size of a fingertip appeared in the screen center, slowly growing smaller as it traveled toward the moon.
"Got it."
Han began a mass analysis to confirm his suspicions.
"This one's still moving in system. It has to be her."
Han activated the intercom.
"Battle station's back there. We might be going any time."
"We know,"
Kip replied. "We're Jedi."
Miwal informed him that she and Kakmim were also ready. Nogri were always ready. A moment later, the irregular matte-black body of two Stealth X starfighters pulled alongside the Falcon, and Han saw Luke's and Mara's helmet-framed faces looking over from the cockpits of Phantom Craft. Leia closed her eyes for a moment, reaching out to them in the Force, trying to get some sense of their intentions. After the Dark Nest attack on the Shadow, they had decided to return with only the Falcon and a couple of Stealth X escorts. Since the Falcon was not equipped to carry fighters, Luke and Mara had been taking turns with the other two Jedi Masters on the mission, Kip and Saba, ferrying the starfighters through hyperspace. Luke and Mara happened to be in the cockpits when the time came for the final jump to Korribu, but Han suspected that Mara would have insisted on being one of the pilots to follow Alima into the Dark Nest. She was taking the whole assassin thing pretty personally. Leia opened her eyes. Then Luke and Mara accelerated away toward Kerr. They remained visible for a moment, a pair of dark X's silhouetted against Korribu's bright stripes, then shrank into invisibility. A pillar of orange rocket exhaust arced out of Kerr's frozen tangle of ethmane crystals, emerging from an ice-lined shaft more than a kilometer across. This column was far larger than any others Luke and Mara had seen, its heat raising a wall of steam as it bent toward the Skywalkers and streaked low over the moon's frozen surface. 2 seconds later, Luke's astromech unit sounded an attack alarm. Luke felt a start from Mara
as an explosion rocked her Stealth X. Then his own starfighter gave a sharp double buck. The astromech pointedly informed Luke they were being ambushed by Gorog dart ships. Luke continued toward the Falcon, flying low over Kerr's feathery jungle of ethmane crystals. The Skywalkers had traveled barely a kilometer when another column of dart ships rose out of the ethmane jungle ahead. As the Skywalkers drew closer, the orange wall resolved itself into a pattern of fiery whirling disks, each with the black dot of a dart ship at its heart. Mara took the lead and pulled up, a loose wing stabilizer shuddering under the strain. The two nearest swarms, the one blocking their escape and the one pursuing from behind, nosed up to give chase. Suddenly, Mara dropped the nose of her Stealth X. Luke followed so quickly that he almost beat her, but the Dark Nest was not fooled. The dart ship simply leveled off and continued to close on the Skywalkers. The ice jungle's feathery canopy came up rapidly. Luke began to wonder when she intended to pull up. She did not. A flurry of cannon bolts lanced out from Mara's Stealth X, instantly superheating the ice crystals in front of her and filling Luke's forward view with brown steam. He switched to instrument flying and followed her through the cloud into the snarled depths of the ice jungle. Mara flipped her Stealth X up on edge and slipped between two ethmane pillars, then crashed through a curtain of frost and sent up a glittering cloud of ice particles. Luke ducked under a frozen arch, then shot ahead of Mara into the lead. Luke quickly brought them around. It would be safer to go in the opposite direction and sneak a look at the nest. He surrendered his steering arm to the Force, and his hand began to move of its own accord, guiding the Stealth X into one shimmering gap after another, bobbing over blue curtains, ducking beneath long fronds of frost, blasting holes through impassable walls of ice. Mara stayed close on his tail, almost joining her hand to his through their force bond, and 30 seconds later, they shot through a small icy portal into an irregular blue shaft barely broad enough for Luke to bank the Stealth X into a tight inside spiral. Stang! Luke felt Mara's fear through the force, and his heart jumped into his throat. Then, as he continued his own spiral around the small shaft, he saw the jagged hole where her Stealth X had bounced off the icy wall. His tactical display showed her still on his tail, but weaving badly. Mara? Luke called through the force. Fine, she answered. Luke continued to bank, setting the Stealth X up on one wing so that he could look up out one side of the cockpit and down out the other. He estimated they were about 2 kilometers deep, though that was impossible to confirm with instruments. Below, the shaft continued to narrow and curved back under itself, concealing the nest entrance behind a wall of blue ice. Aside from the walls, which had been polished smooth by the heat and freeze cycle of countless rocket launches, there was no sign of dart ships. Mara seemed worried by how quiet it was. Luke didn't like it either. Gorog would have left something to defend the nest. The hair on his neck began to rise, and he decided they had seen enough. Mara, now directly opposite him on the other side of the shaft, agreed and started to climb. Her shields were flickering, and that loose stabilizer was flapping around beneath her wing. Luke fell in behind her. Then an attack alarm sounded, and a laser cannon began to fire blue bolts up the shaft. He felt another jolt of emotion from Mara, this time anger, as her Stealth X took a trio of hits. Her shields went down with the second, and the ends of both starboard wings vanished with the third. Luke did not waste time looking at his tactical display. He simply dropped the Stealth X into a dive and started firing, and then saw the nose of a Lima stolen skiff just slipping back out of sight. He continued to fire for a second longer, pouring his rage and disbelief at her through the force, until the bend in the shaft vanished behind a curtain of ethmane steam. The stumps of Mara's starboard wings tumbled away in a cascade of sparks and mini-explosions. Then she slipped into a spin and flashed past Luke, vanishing into the steam below. The stolen skiff was floating amid the rest of the wreckage, a pile of flattened Durasteel flickering in the light of Mara's two functioning spotlights. there was no way to tell whether Alima and Ben's Killick friend had been aboard when the proton torpedoes eviscerated the launching bay. But Mara was betting the pair had escaped. Mara guided her ailing starfighter through a jagged breach in the launching bay's rear wall. Her spotlight stabbed through a dusty cloud of floating rubble, illuminating a maintenance hangar with a bank of shattered dartship berths on the far wall. She sealed her EV suit and dropped her Stealth X to the deck. Knowing that Luke would be covering her from his own craft, Mara sprang out of the cockpit and tumbled all the way to the ceiling, coming to a rest beside a spitcrete ridge that would have served the Gorog as a sort of upside-down catwalk. When no attacks came, she exchanged her lightsaber for her blaster and covered Luke while he landed. Luke took cover inside the shattered base of a storage tank. Then Mara pushed off the ceiling and joined him.
What do you think?
Mara spoke over the suitcom.
Try to squeeze into your stealth and sneak out?
Luke shook his helmet.
There won't be any slipping past that dartship swarm out there. As a matter of fact...
Luke's sentence came to a sudden end as the orange glow of rocket exhaust lit the launching bay entrance. Mara grabbed Luke's arm and kicked off the floor, using the force to pull them toward a ruptured door membrane in the back of the maintenance hangar. The comm channel abruptly dissolved into static as a trio of bright flashes lit the chamber. Mara suddenly grew uncomfortably warm inside her vac suit, and the shockwave hurled her and Luke headlong through the door membrane into the darkened utility passage beyond. With no gravity or friction to slow them down, they did not stop until they slammed into a wall 2 seconds later. Mara hit back first, driving the air from her lungs, but not breaking anything she could feel. A sharp crack over the comm suggested that Luke had impacted on his helmet.
Check air and suit,
Luke said, righting himself.
I'm good,
she said.
You? Have a hisser,
he reported, indicating a small air leak.
But we'd better look for it later.
The walls and floor were coated in a frozen black wax that absorbed the light from Luke's helmet lamp and made the passage seem even darker and murkier than it was. Every few meters, a fissure, caused by the tunnel's sudden decompression, ran all the way to the moon ice, sometimes exposing a short length of spitcrete piping or power conduit. The unlit passages seemed to meander at random, branching off at arbitrary intervals and rejoining the main passage without crossing any obvious destination between. At the speed he and Mara were sailing through the darkness, using the force to pull themselves along through the zero-G, Luke was growing badly disoriented. Mara suddenly grabbed a crack in the wall and brought herself to a stop. Luke did the same and found himself looking at one of the bulging hatch membranes that Killix used instead of airlocks. Ambush, Mara concluded. Luke looked around, and his helmet lamp illuminated a torrent of dartship pilots pouring around the bend at most 30 meters away. Luke began to pour blaster fire into the front ranks. The insects just kept coming.
Trouble,
Luke said over the suitcom. Lightsabers would be more effective, but he really didn't want to go hand-to-hand with who knew how many bugs.
Big trouble, in fact. Maybe not that big,
Mara said.
No? They can't all be dartship pilots,
Mara said. Luke felt, rather than saw, her nod at the bulging hatch membrane.
So they won't all be wearing pressure suits.
They ignited their lightsabers, then pressed themselves against the tunnel wall and slashed a large X across the center of the hatch. The membrane blew apart, and their would-be ambushers went tumbling past on a tide of explosive decompression, crashing into the pilot swarm and bringing its advance to a tumbling, confused halt. The passage opened into a murky vault too large for Mara's helmet lamp to illuminate. The beam merely reached into the darkness and vanished. Her danger sense had been on overload since the moment they entered the nest. Luke's blaster flashed behind her. A distant pew-pew sounded through Mara's helmet, suggesting that air pressure had been restored to at least this part of the nest. A quick check of the heads-up display inside her faceplate confirmed her guess.
At least my hisser's no problem now,
Luke opened his faceplate and continued to fire. One less thing to worry about.
Mara equalized her suit pressure, then retracted her faceplate and nearly gagged on the clawing rankness of the air.
You could have warned me. What is that smell?
Maybe it's better not to know, Luke said. Something rotting, I think. And I thought Lysel smelled bad.
As Mara spoke, Alima Rar appeared in the tunnel above.
Sorry, she said to Mara. We can't let you leave.
You can't let us?
Mara pulled her lightsaber from its belt hook, then glanced toward the empty tunnel that led back toward the hangars.
From where I stand, you're in no position to stop us.
Alima gave a sly smile.
We believe we are.
A muffled rustling rolled up the tunnel, and a wall of Gorog warriors appeared in its mouth.
Tell your masters they're about to wish they had died in the crash.
Mara slipped a fresh power pack into her blaster pistol.
We're coming for them.
Alima smirked, and Gorog warriors began to pour out of the tunnel behind her.
You will need more than lightsabers and blaster pistols, we think.
The Falcon's darkened airlock slid silently open. The four YVH Bug Cruncher war droids, on loan from Tendrando Arms and specially programmed to Han specifications, jumped into the pitch-black hangar. Next went the four Jedi, Kip, Saba, Octa Ramus, and Kyle Katarn in their combat-rated vac suits. Han was just glad he had convinced Meewal and Cockmame to help Jun and Tarfang guard the Falcon, or he and Leia, bringing up the rear in standard-issue EV suits, would have had to follow them, too.
I'm the captain of Millennium Falcon,
Han grumbled into his faceplate.
That used to mean something.
A moment later, Leia took his wrist, and they jumped out of the airlock. The YVHs gave an all-clear and activated their thrusters, briefly illuminating the airless, flotsam-choked launching bay before they shot through a hole in the rear wall. Kip and the other masters activated their green combat lamps and used the Force to pull themselves after the war droids. Leia drew Han by the wrist and followed. As they passed through the hole, Leia's helmet lamp came on. Han activated his own light and found himself in a small repair hangar. The YVHs led the way into a small utility tunnel filled with Gorog bodies. They passed through the tattered remains of a hatch membrane and continued deeper into the twisting warren of tunnels, following a steady trail of dead Gorog and gouged walls. The rescue party came to another hatch, this one intact, and progress slowed to a crawl as the bug crunchers pushed through one by one. Kip and Octa Ramus followed the droids, and suddenly the membrane grew bright with battle flashes.
Enemy located.
Bug One reported.
Engaging now.
The chamber was choked with dead Gorog, and still more came, pushing through the bodies and floating globules of gore to press their assault, their electrobolt rifles stringing the darkness with bright ropes of silver. Luke was tumbling through the rancid air, somersaulting over forks of crackling energy, and spinning away from thrusting tridents, his lightsaber tracing a green cage around him as the blade moved smoothly from defense to offense, from diverting electrobolts to cleaving dark chitin. Mara was twisting along 3 meters behind him, connected by an invisible force tether, firing her blaster with one hand and wielding her lightsaber with the other. They were sinking deeper into a battle trance, becoming one with their weapons, becoming the hands of death, and drawing ever closer to Alima Rar.
Getting dangerous in here, Mara observed. Looks like.
Luke risked a glance toward Alima, who was clearly in no hurry to engage the Skywalkers directly and was gliding back toward a tunnel she seemed particularly protective of.
Hoping to wear us down, Mara observed.
Luke shook his head.
Protecting something, he said. For someone.
Take her, Mara ordered through their force bond.
I'll cover.
Luke moved to intercept, no longer dodging or twisting, just shouldering past Killick corpses and going after Alima. A trio of Gorog warriors zeroed in on Luke, forcing him into somersaults until Mara took them out. He arrived at the cutoff point after Alima, but close enough on her heels that she had to turn and face him. "Alima, this doesn't have to happen," he said. Alima sprang, flying at Luke behind a whirling onslaught of slash and backslash. Luke blocked and redirected her momentum, sending her tumbling into the body-choked darkness and placing himself between her and the tunnel she had been guarding. This time, she came at Luke under control, combining the flashing blades of a speed attack with the driving stomp kicks of a power assault. He switched to a one-handed grasp, parrying her strikes with his own lightsaber, slipping her kicks with a deft trunk twist, deflecting electro bolts with the palm of his free hand. Then Luke felt an icy jolt of fear. He looked past Alima to see Gorog warriors closing on Mara from all sides, silver rays crackling at her so fast and furious she could not block them all. The first bolt burned a fist-sized hole in the thigh of her vac suit and filled the air with the stench of scorched durafiber. The second caught her in the chest, and Luke did not see the third. By then, he was driving forward, pressing the attack, and forcing Alima back toward Mara. Suddenly, the Twi'lek stopped, determined to stand her ground. Luke tapped her lightsaber aside, then used the force to pull her hand toward him, driving her off balance onto his own weapon. Her eyes widened, and the blade sliced down through her clavicle, deep into her shoulder. Luke brought his boot up under her chin, snapping her head back, sending her arms flying out to her sides. She began to backflip away, her lightsaber slipping from her open fingers. Luke summoned the weapon into his empty hand and continued toward Mara, who had disappeared inside a knot of Gorog. Her weapons were still flashing inside the snarl, and her presence was burning hot in the force, and that gave him hope. The battle erupted into a tempest of hissing blades and shrieking blasters and crackling electro bolts. Luke opened a dozen thoraxes in a dozen strokes. Then, his back spasmed with the paralyzing heat of an electro bolt strike. Mara fired from somewhere inside the tangle of limbs and mandibles, and the acrid stench of melted chitin rose behind him. Luke pulled himself toward a glimpse of red-gold hair, his lightsabers opening a path, filling the air with globules of insect gore. Finally, Luke came to Mara's whirling figure. Her vac suit had been burned to tatters, and she had half a dozen black circles where electrobolts had hit her. Mara briefly locked gazes with Luke. Then her green eyes slid away, looking overhead. Luke followed her line of sight and was surprised to see Alima Rar pulling herself into the tunnel mouth. Her left arm was floating at her side, a deep, gaping V where she had been cleaved. Leia's arms had become dead weights 15 minutes into the fight, and she was able to wield her lightsaber now only by virtue of the strength Saba was lending her through the Force. Han had run out of power packs, she had not noticed when, and traded his T-21 for a pair of captured assault rifles, which he had taken to firing one in each hand. The bug crunchers had taken so many hits that bugs 1 through 3 had exhausted their laminamium repair ingots. And the Gorog just kept coming, a limitless swarm.
Han!
Leia's lightsaber swept down to divert an electro bolt streaking toward his knee.
Do those bug crunchers have thermal detonators on them? What do you think? Use them. In here? Use them. I don't think we're going to reach Luke and Mara in time. And we're not doing very... YVH bug crunchers.
Han said over the combat channel.
Go BAM. Use your detonators.
BAM status requires authorization.
Do it!
Han shouted so loudly that his voice reverberated out of 5 other helmets.
Do it now!
Authorization code, do it now, accepted.
Bug One said. The soft crump of the droid's grenade launcher sounded from the head of the line.
By any means status.
A brilliant flash lit the corridor, and the rest of the report was lost to the ear-splitting crackle of a thermal detonator. Leia and the others barely had time to start forward before a brilliant flash filled the corridor behind them. Leaving Bug 4 to handle rear guard duty, they followed Kip and the other masters forward. Another crump sounded from the front of the line. Another detonator exploded. The tunnel behind them filled with Gorog, and Bug 4 launched a detonator.
Blast!
Saba shut down her lightsaber.
Where is the fun in that?
Moving much faster now, they found themselves entering a vast, murky vault filled with Gorog warriors. Leia could sense Luke and Mara a dozen meters above, hidden in a tangle of insects so thick and large she could not see the glow of their lightsabers.
How about it, Saba?
Han asked.
That enough fun for you?
Before the bearable could answer, some of the Gorog recovered their senses and fired a volley of electrobolts. Leia's lightsaber came up automatically, as did those of Kip, Saba, and the other masters, but they were just too many strikes to block. Leia took a scalding hit in the shoulder and heard Han curse as he took one. Then a pair of crumps sounded as Bug 2 and Bug 3 launched more detonators.
Careful!
Kip warned.
Master Skywalker is...
The rest was lost to a pair of ear-splitting crackles, and Leia's sight flashed to white. The air shuddered as the Bug Crunchers opened up with their blaster cannons. By the time her vision cleared, both droids had activated their thrusters and were shooting toward the combat tangle above. Kip and the other masters were close on their heels. Han dropped one of his electrobolt rifles and grabbed Leia around the waist, then activated his belt thrusters. They jetted toward the combat above, plowing through an ever-thickening morass of blood globules and drifting bodies. The largest part of the Gorog swarm had turned to face Kip and the other masters, but Luke and Mara were still trapped a few meters above the main combat, their lightsabers weaving brilliant snakes of color as they spun and slashed.
That way!
Leia reached across Han's face, pointing away from the battle at an angle.
Flank him!
Han turned in the direction Leia had indicated, then dropped his second assault rifle and drew his trusty DL-44 blaster. Han braced his blaster hand across his free arm and pointed the emitter nozzle at one of the Gorog attacking Luke and Mara.
Are you crazy?
Leia cried.
You can't shoot into a hand-to-hand fight.
No kidding,
Han replied.
I didn't know that.
He squeezed the trigger, and a bolt streaked up to blast a Gorog's head apart. He fired again, and an abdomen exploded. The third shot burned a hole through a warrior's thorax. Han began to fire more rapidly now, always aiming for the perimeter of the battle. Luke and Mara used the Force to shove targets into his line of fire, and it was only a few seconds before the only Gorog between them and the Solos were dead ones. Han stopped firing and waved them down.
Come on! Let's get out of...
Luke and Mara shook their heads, then turned toward the ceiling and vanished into a tunnel surrounded by the five largest, ugliest Killix Leia had ever seen. Mara and Luke were 10 meters down a sticky, wax-lined tunnel, and every time Mara made the mistake of breathing, she came close to retching. The tunnel finally opened into a large vault where the air was so humid and hot that their faces grew instantly moist. An eerie whine permeated the chamber, barely loud enough to hear above the pounding of her own heart, and the Force grew heavy with the pain of the nearly dead. Mara followed Luke into the vault, and suddenly she forgot the eerie sound, the horrible smell, even her own fiery pain. The entire chamber was lined by large hexagonal cells, some sealed with a wax cap, some containing a paralyzed Chiss captive curled around a Gorog larva. Many of the prisoners were dead and mostly devoured, with the barbed mandibles of a nearly developed larva protruding half a meter above the cell walls. Just as many remained alive, groaning weakly as larvae gnawed at their immobile bodies. I'm beginning to understand the Chiss point of view, Luke said. I wonder if Raynar knows about this.
Maybe. On some... Mara's neck prickled with cold, and she spun around to find the wrong end of an electrobolt rifle illuminated in her lamp beam. Behind it, sighting down the stock, was a blue face framed by a pair of Twi'lek Leku. Rather than taking half a second to ignite her lightsaber and another half a second to block, Mara pointed and released the force energy she had been using to keep herself going. Her body erupted into pain and muscle tremors, but blue lightning shot from her fingertips and blasted the rifle, driving the stock back into the Twi'lek's mangled shoulder and crackling deep into the wound. Alima cried out and let the weapon slip from her hands, then went limp and floated away into darkness. Luke's lightsaber crackled to life and droned past Mara's ear, blocking what sounded more like blaster fire than another electrobolt. She sensed a second attack coming and activated her own blade, sweeping it up behind Luke's to bat away another string of bolts. The blaster fire fell silent, but not before Mara could swing her helmet lamp toward its source. She glimpsed a hump-shouldered man with a half-melted face and one chitinous insect arm grafted to his shoulder. Then he slipped out of the light.
Force lightning.
The man's voice was raspy and sharp.
We had thought Skywalker's Jedi considered themselves above that.
We make exceptions. Mara sensed a certain apprehension in Luke, especially in your case, Welk. As Mara spoke, she and Luke moved apart, positioning themselves just within each other's reach, where they could still take advantage of overlapping fields of defense. A soft flutter sounded above Mara's head. Mara reached out in the force, but felt only a shadowy sense of danger, so vague and ambiguous she could have been imagining it. There's something flying around over here. Welk? Luke asked. A string of blaster bolts erupted from Luke's other side, directly opposite the fluttering. He brought his lightsaber around and sent the bolts tearing back toward the source. Mara brought her own blade up, slashing through the darkness above her head, finding only dank air. Another flutter sounded behind her. She spun to attack and suddenly found herself in the force grasp of someone else, twirling across the room and accelerating. Then she came to the wall, and a piercing agony blossomed low in her back. She looked down to find 10 centimeters of mandible tip protruding from her abdomen, and the pain spread across her entire belly.
Rotter!
Mara reversed her grip on her lightsaber, and a flutter arose in the darkness at her side. Suddenly the handle grew stinging cold, then the blade started to sputter, flicker, and fade. Mara attacked anyway. The blade sank 2 centimeters and sizzled out. The larva began to shake its head back and forth, its mandibles tearing at her inside. Mara? Luke had activated his second lightsaber, the one he had taken from Alima earlier, and was advancing on Welk, battling the dark Jedi's blaster bolts back at him.
Need the spare? Fine here.
Mara returned her useless weapon to its clip.
Just take care of Welk.
Mara drew her blaster and put a bolt into the larva's head. The handle grew icy cold, then a depletion alarm sounded. When she squeezed the trigger, she heard only the soft pop of a gas charge moving into the exciter chamber.
Neat trick, Mara said to the darkness. It isn't going to save you.
The air pulsed above Mara's left shoulder. She swung her helmet lamp toward the sound and, as always, saw nothing. Then, a prickle of danger sense raced up her spine, and she looked in the opposite direction. Gliding out of the darkness, just at the edge of her light, was a meter-high Gorog with thick chitin armor and overlong mandibles. Even had she not seen the splint fused to its broken leg, Mara would have known that this was the assassin she had fought on Ossus. Mara finally hesitated, confused, unsure, angry. The Nest would be reaching out to Ben now, using the Force to share all that was happening here, to make him feel every Gorog death. A puff of dank air brushed Mara's face. Her helmet grew biting cold, and the lamp dimmed to darkness.
Then a soft foot sounded from the direction of the approaching assassin bug. A glob of caustic-smelling acid hit the front of her ragged vac suit, and her flesh erupted with a new kind of burning. Ben would have to get over it. Opening herself completely to the force, using her resolve to draw it in, Mara lifted her hand toward the assassin bug and squeezed. It popped with a long, sharp crackle and the rotten smell of dissipating methane. A pair of blue bolts flashed up from Welk's direction and streaked into the smashed body. Mara had just enough time to push out with the force and create a small bubble of protection before the assassin bug exploded. In the orange light, floating just beyond arm's reach, she glimpsed a pale oval with little to suggest a face. Only a few dark areas where there might have been a mouth and nose and eyes. Mara swung her hand toward it, but the blast light faded, and the apparition was gone. Luke barely felt the heat of the explosion, but the shockwave sent him cartwheeling into darkness. He kept his helmet lamp fixed on Welk's tumbling form and brought himself to a halt a few meters later. Welk slammed into a sealed cell and crashed through the wax cap. Luke force-plucked the blaster from Welk's hand and started toward him. Luke was still 5 meters away when Welk pulled his twisted body free of the cell. Luke reactivated his lightsabers. The soft whiffle of wings sounded to his right, and the air suddenly grew as thick and heavy as water. He twisted toward the noise, but his body seemed to move in slow motion, and by the time he turned, there was nothing to see but darkness. A crimson blade ignited a few meters ahead, and Luke knew Welk was coming. He brought his lightsabers around in a crossguard and looked back toward the attack. Luke extended himself toward the glow, slamming his force presence into Welk. It was like trying to push Koribu out of orbit. The low throb of wings sounded overhead, and the hilt of Alima's lightsaber grew painfully cold as the thing causing the sound. He wondered if that could be Lomi Plo, drained the energy from its power cell. The blade sputtered and died. Welk slammed into Luke headfirst, sending them both into an uncontrolled tumble. The Dark Jedi's crimson blade flashed past Luke's leg and burned a gouge into his shin, sending a fiery shaft of pain straight to the heart. Luke caught Welk's gaze, then raised his remaining lightsaber to high guard. A soft flutter sounded behind him. The hilt of his lightsaber grew cold, as Alima's had a moment earlier, and the blade died. By then, Luke had already released the weapon and accelerated to his best speed, slipping forward even as he twisted away from the attack. The sudden speed change caught Welk by surprise. Luke trapped the Dark Jedi's wrist in an X-block and continued to pivot smoothly away, forcing those hands into a tight circle and driving the lightsaber back up into Welk's stomach in one not-so-fast motion. Welk let out a blood-curdling scream and tried to deactivate the lightsaber. But Luke had his hand over the switch, and now he was the strong one. He wrenched the handle free and ripped the blade out of the Dark Jedi's side, then turned to face the attack he felt certain would be coming from Lomi Plo, and went spinning out of control when the air suddenly grew light and thin again, and he could once more move at normal speed. Luke saw the wall flashing past, coming up fast, barbed mandibles protruding where he was about to hit. He deactivated the lightsaber, then reached out in the force and jerked the larva from its cell, slammed into it in midair, and tumbled off in a new direction. This time he managed to stop himself before he hit another wall. He reignited Welk's lightsaber and spun around with the crimson blade swinging. Then felt a jolt of alarm and sensed Mara approaching out of the darkness. "Hey, it's me!" Mara used the force to push the weapon down. "Don't you recognize your own wife?" Luke deactivated the blade. "Sorry." A series of dull thuds reverberated through the chamber, followed by the fading light and dying crackle of the thermal detonators that had just discharged inside a wall across the chamber. An instant later, A pair of Han's YVH Bug Cruncher droids rode into the chamber on the blue-white tails of their propulsion thrusters and quickly swung toward the Skywalkers.
Remain calm. Remain stationary. Help is coming.
The bolt burns had been smeared with Bactisalve. The puncture wounds were covered with active bandages on both sides, and there was enough Stericlean in the air to disinfect half the nest. All that could be done in the field, Leia had done, and still she did not like how her sister-in-law looked. Mara had an ashy complexion and a hint of blue in her lips, and her eyes were so sunken they looked like crash craters. "We'll get you to the Falcon soon," Leia said. "Bug 4 should be returning any time now." "No hurry." Mara squeezed Leia's hand. "I've been hit worse than this." Leia reached out in the Force and felt a swarm of Killix approaching in the company of three joiners. "It's Jaina and Zek," she said. "With Raynar."
"Like I said," Han muttered. "Trouble."
The golden glow resolved itself into a line of shine balls being carried by a long column of Killix in chitinous pressure suits of many different configurations. At the head of the procession came the hulking form of Raynar Thule, his vac suit helmet tucked under one arm, his scar-frozen face red with fury. Half a meter behind, Jaina and Zek followed. Leia waited as they approached, then bowed to Raynar. "Unu Thule, I'm sorry we must meet."
"So are we,"
Raynar said. Raynar floated around Leia to the sides of Luke and Mara, and several hand-sized Killik healers poked their tiny heads up past the collar of his pressure suit. Leia started to go after him, but was stopped by a gentle Force tug. "Wait with us," Jaina said from behind Leia. "Trying to explain now will only make Unu angrier. Thank you for the advice." Leia turned to face Jaina and caught the flash of several tiny eyes peering out of her collar too. "Looks crowded in there." Jaina stared into Leia's eyes. "Not really."
"It grows on you," Zek said.
He reached over and rubbed the backs of his fingers down Jaina's cheek.
"To tell the truth, we kind of like it," Jaina added.
"Oh," Leia said. "I would have thought all that creeping inside your suit would feel, uncomfortable." Jaina and Zek shook their heads in unison.
"Not at all," Jaina said.
"It makes us feel whole," Zek added.
The trio spent an awkward moment looking at each other, Jaina and Zek softly humming and clicking to themselves, Leia hiding her feelings behind a polite smile. Raynar slipped away from Luke and Mara, who were now crawling with Killik healers, and returned to Leia.
"Now you can explain this slaughter, Princess Leia,"
Raynar said.
"Why did the Jedi kill all these kind?"
"Quite simply, we had no choice," Leia said. "They were attacking Luke and Mara." This drew a round of suit-muffled chest pulsing from the entourage of Unu.
"Strange,"
Raynar said.
"This does not look like the Skywalker's nest. Are you sure they were not the ones attacking?"
"It's complicated. This nest was drawing the colony into a devastating war. We hoped to undermine their influence so you would consider our peace plan."
"But this slaughter was pointless,"
Raynar growled.
"Eliminating this nest can only turn us against your plan."
"Unfortunately, we had no choice," Luke delicately interjected. "They were trying to eliminate us. It was self-defense."
"Self-defense?"
Raynar sounded outraged.
"The kind fight only when they are attacked."
"Let me show you something." Leia addressed herself not only to Raynar, but to the entire Unu entourage. "You need to understand something about this nest, and then we can talk about whether the colony truly wants peace." Without waiting for permission, Leia turned toward the ceiling, leading Raynar, Han, and the Unu through the body-filled darkness toward the nursery entrance. After a few moments, they reached the cave that Bugs 2 and 3 had blasted through the ceiling, and the smell of decay grew sickening. Kip and the other masters were inside the nursery, gathering Chiss survivors and searching for Lomi Plo. So Leia opened herself to the battle meld and urged them to have the bug cruncher stand down. Halfway through the cave, they found Saba waiting. Her vac suit and face scales were smeared with wax and offal from pulling Chiss out of larval cells. Saba said,
"This one is sorry for her smell. The work in here is messy."
"What is your work?"
Raynar asked. Saba looked to Leia before answering. "It will be better if we just show you," Leia said. "Any sign of Alima yet?"
"None," Saba said. "Perhaps she was disintegrated in a detonator explosion."
"Maybe. What about Lomi Plo?" Saba turned her palms up.
"Vanished."
"Lomi Plo is dead,"
Raynar said, as if by rote.
"She died in the crash."
Saba led Leia and the others into the darkness of the nursery. A few meters in, Leia stopped and swung her helmet lamp toward the nearest wall. The beam illuminated the half-devoured corpse of a Chiss prisoner, still curled around a squirming Gorog larva. Raynar gasped, and the nearest Yunu brought their mandibles together in shock. Han shined his helmet lamp on a second cell, and Saba a third. Both of those cells also contained the bodies of Chiss captives.
"What is this?"
Raynar demanded.
"Looks pretty clear to me," Han said. "Kinda makes a fella see how the Chiss might have a point, doesn't it?"
Raynar whirled on Han.
"You think we did this?"
"Not you, exactly," Leia said. "The Dark Nest did it. The Gorog."
"Gorog?"
Raynar's gaze drifted back to the gruesome sight in the cells.
"What is this Dark Nest?"
"This."
Saba waved her arm at the murk around them.
"The nest that keeps attacking us. The one that has been feeding on Chiss captives. The one that made you build more nests at Koribu."
Raynar glowered at the barrable.
"The nests do not lead Yunu. Yunu leads the nests."
"Really?" Leia cocked her brow. "Then all this is Yunu's doing?"
"No!"
Raynar's voice grew sharp.
"This is not even a colony nest. We do not have a nest on Kerr."
Han looked around pointedly. "Funny. Looks a lot like that nursery on Julio. Except for all the Chiss captives, of course." "Actually, it can be a colony nest," Leia said to Raynar. "And you wouldn't remember. Silgal thinks the Dark Nest serves as a sort of unconscious for the colony's collective mind. It would be able to influence the kind without you knowing, just as the unconscious mind of most species influences their behavior."
"Impossible,"
Raynar said far too quickly.
"There are no Gorog in the kind. How could the nest influence us?"
"The same way you influenced Jaina and the others when you called them to help the colony," Leia replied. "Through the Force." Raynar's eyes flared in understanding. But Yunu's protest rose to a crescendo. He closed his eyes as though trying to concentrate. Leia glanced over at Saba and mouthed Welk's name. The barrable's eyes narrowed, but she nodded and quickly slipped away. Raynar opened his eyes.
"Even if you are right about the Dark Nest, conquering is not our way. The kind seek only to live in harmony with the song of the universe."
"Yeah, well, you don't have to conquer something to take it over," Han said. "And the Dark Nest had more in it than just Killix."
"I assume you remember the Dark Jedi," Leia pressed. "Raynar fought them as a young man at Yavin 4, and Welk and Lomi Plo abandoned the strike team on Banu Ras." Raynar studied her for a moment, then nodded.
"We remember. Welk and Lomi Plo died in the crash."
"Then who is this?"
Saba said. She emerged from shadows, dragging Welk's badly slashed body. Saba sent the corpse gliding toward Raynar's chest. Raynar seemed riveted by the corpse. "Jason investigated the crash," Leia said. "He saw you pull Welk and Lomi out of the flames through the Force," she clarified.
"Yes, we remember."
Raynar nodded and closed his eyes.
"Jason was there.
on the bridge for just a moment. He gave us the strength to continue, to pull them.
Suddenly, Raynar stopped and turned toward the center of the nursery.
Where is Lomi?
He had barely asked the question when the Yunu entourage began to disperse across the nursery, their shine balls illuminating the vault in a spray of whirling light.
Where is Lomi?
Raynar repeated. Relief washed over Leia like a Rebolian petal oil shower. She had broken through to Raynar's memory. Then you recall saving her.
We remember. She was afraid that the Yuuzhan Vong would find us again, or that Anakin would come looking for her, or Master Skywalker. She was afraid of many things. She wanted to hide.
Well, Han said, that sure confirms Silgal's theory.
What theory?
Raynar asked. The way Silgal sees it, Han said, when a Killik nest swallows up someone who's Force-sensitive, the nest takes on some of his personality.
In your case, Leia said, the Yogoi absorbed the value you place on individual life. They started to care for their feeble and provide for the starving, and it wasn't long before their success led to the creation of the Yunu.
That's much how we remember it,
Raynar allowed.
But it has nothing to do with the Gorog.
You said you remember pulling Welkin Lomi Plo out of the fire, Han pointed out. But then they just disappeared. You said Lomi was afraid and wanted to hide, Leia added. That was what Yogoi absorbed from her. Isn't it possible that she also created a nest of her own? A nest hidden from everyone else. As Raynar considered this, the color seemed to drain from his face.
We caused this?
That's not what we're saying, Leia said.
If we saved Lomi and Welk, we are responsible.
An eerie tempest of clacking and muffled booming rolled through the nursery as the Yunu again started to protest. Raynar turned from Leia and the others and slowly glided along the wall, peering into each cell he passed and shaking his head in despair.
If we saved Lomi and Welk, we did this.
You should get a medal for saving them, Han said. What happened later, that's not your fault. That got Raynar's attention. He stopped and turned to Han.
This is not our fault?
No way, Han said. All you did was save their lives. That doesn't make you responsible for what they did later.
We are not responsible.
Raynar's voice was filled with relief, and Yunu's clacking died away.
Maybe this is a Chiss ruse. It must have been a trick to convince the Jedi that the colony is in the wrong. They would sacrifice 1,000 of their own kind to turn the Jedi against us.
That doesn't explain the Gorog that attacked us on the way in, Leia said. They weren't Chiss, and neither are all these larvae.
Yes, it was a very insidious plan,
Raynar said.
The Gorog must have been brain slaves. They were forced to fight and to feed on Chiss volunteers.
Perhaps, Leia allowed carefully, but there is another explanation.
The Chiss are creating Killik clones?
Raynar asked. I don't think so, Leia said. The Yunu entourage began to return, many of them drawing the helpless, wide-eyed forms of the Chiss survivors that the rescue team had been pulling out of the cells. Do you remember what we were talking about? Leia asked, continuing to address Raynar. The Dark Nest.
Of course. Our memory is excellent.
Raynar's eyes turned bright and angry.
Han said we were not responsible.
That's right, Leia said. But that doesn't mean...
We understand what not responsible means,
Raynar said.
It means that just because the Dark Nest exists, we are not the ones who created it.
He pointed to the nearest captive, a frightened-looking male wearing the black shreds of a CEDF gunnery officer's uniform.
The Chiss did.
The officer's face paled to ash, and his eyes grew even wider, the only signs of fear that his paralyzed body could still exhibit.
What we do not understand is the purpose of this nest.
An unintelligible groan rose from the Chiss's throat, so weak and low that Leia took it to be more of a pained whimper than an attempt to speak.
Tell us,
Raynar commanded. The officer moaned again.
We know you are lying.
Raynar's tone was ominous.
Do not insult us.
I don't think he means to, Leia said. I'm sure he doesn't even know that the Chiss created this nest. Raynar turned back to Leia.
You are sure?
Perhaps confident is a better word, Leia corrected. What if the Chiss didn't even know they created the Dark Nest?
How could they create the Dark Nest without knowing it?
Raynar's voice was doubtful.
We don't see how that could work.
By accident, Han said, picking up on Leia's plan. That's the only way it could happen. The Chiss would never intentionally do something like this to themselves, not even to volunteers. They have too many honor codes. That's right, Leia said. Chiss society is defined by war. They're always fighting against the Vagari, the Siruk, even each other. And the Korribu nests are filled with Chiss joiners. Saba let the statement hang, leaving it to her listeners to draw their own conclusions. Remember what Han said about Silgal's theory? Leia asked. She believes that when a Killik nest absorbs a force-sensitive being, the nestmates assume a portion of that being's personality. When the Yogoi absorbed you, Han added, they started to value individual life. When they absorbed Lomi Plo and Welk, they assimilated the desire for secrecy, and...
We are not responsible for the Dark Nest,
Raynar protested.
Lomi Plo and Welk died in the crash.
That's right, Leia said, cringing inwardly. Welk and Lomi Plo died in the crash, but the Yogoi absorbed your respect for living things, and it wasn't long before their success led to the creation of the colony.
This is how we remember it, but we do not see what that has to do with the Dark Nest.
Everything. Saba waved her scaly arm at the nursery again. Look at how many Chiss joiners they had.
Raynar's eyes brightened with anger.
The kind are not cannibals. Our nests do not feed on our own joiners.
Something happened in this nest,
Saba pointed out. And the Chiss are bloodthirsty warriors, Leia added. Really, I'm surprised this hasn't happened to the other Korribu nests.
This?
Raynar shook his head.
This could not happen to another nest of kind.
It happened here,
Saba pointed out.
Maybe there's some sort of balance point, Han added, feigning contemplation. When a nest gets too many Chiss joiners...
He let the sentence trail off and turned toward Raynar, his expression growing steadily more concerned. Raynar finished the thought.
It becomes a Dark Nest.
The Yunu broke into a distressed drone, and he nodded.
That could explain what happened here.
The Chiss are great believers in secrecy,
Saba offered helpfully.
Yes.
Raynar spoke with an air of certainty.
The kind will take no more Chiss into our nests.
That's one solution, Leia agreed. But what are you going to do with all your prisoners? A nervous clatter rose among the Yunu, and Raynar asked,
Prisoners?
Chiss prisoners, Saba said. As the war spreads, you will have hundreds of thousands, millions.
Only one thing to do.
Han shook his head in mock regret. Raynar turned to glare at Han.
The colony does not kill its prisoners.
No?
Han returned the glare for a moment.
That'll change soon enough.
The Yunu entourage erupted into an angry buzz, but Raynar said nothing.
Maybe it will not be so bad for the colony, Saba said. She turned to address the Yunu. Soon, all your nests will be like the Gorog. The kind will become great fighters.
We do not wish the kind to be great fighters. We have seen what happens to great fighters. Anakin was a great fighter.
A pang of grief struck Leia, but she forced herself to continue. I'm sorry, Yunu Thule. I don't see how you can avoid it.
Too bad there's going to be a war, Han said. If there wasn't, the colony could set up some sort of buffer zone and keep the Chiss away from their nests.
That might work, Leia said. But Korriba is too close to Chiss territory. The nests are bound to keep coming into contact with Chiss exploration and mining crews. Sooner or later, they'll reach the balance point.
Korriba is too close, Saba agreed. The colony would have to move its nests.
Impossible,
Raynar said.
It cannot be done.
That's very unfortunate. Leia said this to the Yunu entourage. Because Han and I found this paradise world.
Several worlds, probably, Han added.
All empty, lush, with foraging grounds, just waiting for a species to come along and claim them.
The entourage began to rustle with interest.
Tell us more,
Raynar said. It's in a subsector on the edge of colony territory, Leia explained. We didn't have time to do a complete survey, but the world we visited would be perfect for the Tot Nest. There were at least two other habitable planets in the same system, with another dozen systems nearby that gave every indication of being just as profuse.
We were thinking the colony would want to have a look, Han said. But if you guys aren't interested, there are still plenty of displaced species in the Galactic Alliance.
We are interested,
Raynar said.
We always have need of new territory.
Good, Leia said. I'm sure the Chiss could be persuaded to stand down long enough for you to organize a relocation. The corners of Raynar's mouth turned down.
I've told you, that is impossible. There's no way to transport the Korriba nests. They are too large.
Really? Han flashed a smug smile, then asked,
So large they couldn't be temporarily rebuilt in the hangars and launching bays of, say, a few Hapen battle dragons?
Raynar's jaw dropped.
The Hapen fleet would help us escape the Chiss?
Sure. Why not? Han retorted. That has to be easier than defending you.
And they would let us build nests in their battle dragons?
This one thinks they would.
Saba sissed in amusement.
In fact, she is sure of it.
The Yunu thrummed their chests and tapped their mandibles for a long time. Then Raynar finally said,
We understand what you are doing. You're just as bad as Jaina was.
Was?
Han scowled and looked back toward the other room, the one he had departed without even greeting his daughter.
If you've...
Relax, Han. Leia touched Jaina through the Force, then said, She's fine. She's still with Luke and Mara.
Of course she is,
Raynar said indignantly.
We meant that Jaina is no longer welcome in her nest.
Han raised his brow. I've been kicked out of a few saloons in my time, but a nest? What'd she do?
She's too much like you. She is stubborn and tricky, and she cared about nothing but preventing a war.
You don't say. Han smiled proudly, then asked,
Does this mean she'll stop being a bug hugger?
Raynar's eyes flashed in anger. Han, Leia said, remember, Yunu Thule hasn't agreed to our proposal yet.
Well, he hasn't disagreed either.
Han turned to Raynar.
What's it gonna be, kid? A nasty war and a colony full of dark nests? Or a free ride to a free world?
The Yunu erupted into a riot of chest drumming and antenna waving, but Han ignored them and kept his eye fixed on Raynar. The entourage kept the racket up for a few moments longer, then abruptly fell silent and began to stream out of the vault. Leia frowned.
Are we to take that as a yes?
Of course.
Raynar rubbed his arm down the antennae of a small red-eyed killick about half the size of an Ewok, then turned and started after his nest.
Wasn't it our idea?
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Star Wars Dark Nest 1, The Joiner King by Troy Denning. This program was produced, directed, and abridged by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars Dark Nest 1, The Joiner King is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2005. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2005, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.